This is a People First Radio podcast.
CHLY 101.7 FM, Vancouver Island. On the web, www.chly.ca.
The 2015 BC Child Poverty Report Card was released November 24th, 2015 by First Call BC Child and Youth Advocacy Coalition. It shows that BC's continued failure to develop a comprehensive poverty reduction plan with targets and timelines has left the province's child poverty rate unacceptably high. One in five children and more than half of all children living in lone parent families in British Columbia are now living in poverty. I spoke with Adrienne Montani. She's the provincial coordinator for First Call BC Child and Youth Advocacy Coalition earlier this week.
This year's report card states that BC's child poverty crisis demands what you've called a much more urgent response from the provincial government. What's behind this urgency?
Well, because the numbers that we've published about the one in five children that are poor or the one in two children who live with single parents who are poor are real children, and they're living in real families with a lot of stress and struggle going on. So this, we call it a child poverty crisis because for every child living in poverty, it's a daily experience that can rob them of their futures in a lot of ways. So that's why it's urgent. And because we're frustrated with government's lack of urgency on this, we've gotten a response from the provincial government now many years in a row, regardless of what the economy is doing, that when the economy gets better, or we'd like to do more to address this problem, but we'll get to it when the economy improves. And again, if you think about that, we're talking about children's lives, and they're going through their developmental stages now. It's not good enough to say we'll get to this later, and it's totally unnecessary to have that kind of attitude.
There are significant impacts on children who live in lone parent families. Tell us more about that.
Yes, well, children living with a single parent only have one earner, first of all, so there's a reason why they need to make a living wage or have earn enough to support a family, and they only have one earner, so that's why we talk a lot about living wages and minimum wages coming up, things like that. But there's some discrimination going on in the marketplace and in our social services. So we are, because it's not just that individual women are struggling, it's that a whole class of people and children living with a single parent, and most of them are single mothers, are facing poverty in this province. So that there's some systemic issues at work there. And what rises, first of all, to the top is child care as an obstacle and a barrier. There's a child care crisis in the province. People can't afford it. They can't find it. Sometimes the quality suffers. What they can find in their communities is doesn't involve an early childhood educator. So it's somebody trained in early childhood development to give their children a quality care and education and stimulation while they're at work. So families, single parents are stuck not being able to go to work, or when they're working in low-wage jobs, they're putting their children in circumstances that they would not be their first choice because it's what they can afford or what they can find. So child care is a huge issue for these families, as is low wages. And then there's the differential between what men and women earn. So there are lots of issues in the marketplace that devalues women's work, whether it's caring work, like all the people who do child care, for instance, or elderly care. And a lot of those people are women, and their wages don't match their skill levels or the contribution they make to society. So those systemic issues are some of the underlying causes of the high level of single mothers and their children's poverty.
First Call has been tracking child and family poverty rates in BC for nearly two decades now. Your first provincial report card, and that was containing data for 1994, showed that one in five BC children were poor. 19 years later, the data still shows that one in five BC children are poor. Why is this problem so persistent in our province?
Well, it's a combination of factors. One is, as I was describing, the labor market is delivering low-wage jobs for too many people because most poor children live with parents who work. Some of them have parents working full-time for a year, and then they start to take on a second job and a third job, which takes away time with their children. So what the economy is producing at this point in BC is a very stratified or polarized labor market. Some very high-end jobs, some people doing very well, but for a good solid number of people, or one in five children's families, it's not delivering a living wage or enough for them to lift themselves out of poverty. So that's really, I think, the reason. The other side of it is that the cost of living, so our poverty report card gives income stats, so that's just measuring whether people are poor based on their incomes. But the other side is the depth of poverty in this province and the what kind of escalating costs they're facing. So low-income families are really struggling with, as most people would guess, the cost of housing. I've mentioned childcare. Cost of food is going up, or certainly healthy food. Transportation costs are very high for many people, especially if they have to have a vehicle, or even a lot of low-income families can't afford public transit in some of our urban areas if they have access to it. So there are all those pressures on the costs that families are facing with going with low incomes. So what's happened is a government that says we will keep services expensive like MSP and childcare and let families struggle with that. We can't not invest collectively to support people, to support families raising children, and allowed. And overall, this is beyond BC, but the market has allowed a lot of money and wealth to accumulate at the in the top 1% and 0.1% of people. So there's money in our economy. It's just concentrated in very few people's hands, and our tax system facilitates that. So that's a concern. That's why we have a recommendation to reform the tax system to be more progressive, so that those who have great wealth, and they're all around us in our province, share the wealth a bit more, that they pay their fair share of taxes, and that would go for profitable corporations as well. So that combination of driving down wages, sucking profits and wealth up into fewer and fewer hands is what's causing child poverty to be sustained. It's inequality.
The 2015 BC Child Poverty Report Card was released November 24th by First Call BC Child and Youth Advocacy Coalition. It shows that BC's continued failure to develop a comprehensive poverty reduction plan with targets and timelines has left the province's child poverty rate unacceptably high. One in five children, and more than half of all children living in lone parent families in BC, are now living in poverty. This is People First Radio. I'm Kevin. You've been listening to an interview with Adrienne Montani. She's the provincial coordinator of the First Call BC Child and Youth Advocacy Coalition. The coalition's overarching recommendation is for the provincial government to adopt a comprehensive poverty reduction plan. First Call BC emphasizes that any poverty reduction plan should also come with legislated targets and timelines, and a cabinet minister with the authority and responsibility to ensure government is achieving its targets on time. The coalition recommends that poverty reduction planning contain a goal to reduce BC's child poverty rate from the current 20% to 7% or lower by 2020. Here's the second part of my interview with Adrienne Montani.
Your recommendations are linked with the three levels of government responsibility, local, provincial, and federal. Does the election of a new federal government led by Prime Minister Justin Trudeau give you any indication that things will improve for children in BC?
I would say yes. We at First Call are somewhat hopeful with the new federal government, especially when we looked at some of the instructions that were in the mandate letters to the new cabinet ministers. those relating to children and families in particular. So some of the things like a commitment to a new child benefit, this is good public policy, an enhanced amount that in a Canada child, what's been called the Canada Child Tax Benefit. But I think the policy that the Liberals have promised to implement on child tax benefits is good. It will raise thousands probably of children out of poverty because it's a more generous benefit and it's income tested, so it goes to those who need it most. But it also is taking some of money that was in other kinds of benefits like income splitting and the universal child care benefit that the federal government had before that were not income tested and were going to families that didn't need that extra money. So I think we're expecting when the rollout of that policy happens, it will have an impact. And we'll see those statistics in a few years if it gets underway soon. And there's some other things we're encouraged about, but there's less detail. Child care, they've promised some kind of investments, but we're not sure what that looks like. But certainly we're hoping that this government will be moved on those. We're having some conversations now just around refugee transportation loans because a large number of refugees are going to be coming, and that's been one of our recommendations in our report card for a long time, that refugees do not need to be charged interest-bearing loans when they arrive in Canada and be made to pay back their plane fare. And so they've exempted these Syrian refugees, but now I think they realize that that might be not fair to the full spectrum of refugees who've come here before who are facing those loans and needing to pay them off when they're still in kind of recovery mode and just getting settled in a new country. So we're seeing some changes in policy already that we're happy to see. And hopefully children will. There was one campaign promise to have a national children's commissioner. It doesn't show up in the letters that have been sent to cabinet ministers, so we'll be following that because at the federal level we'd like to see more accountability for how public policy affects children.
The first recommendation in your list of recommendations is about a comprehensive poverty reduction plan, and I know this is a very important theme in the work that you do. Tell us more about that and where BC is situated in that whole kind of area of work.
Yeah, well, we're the last province without a provincial poverty reduction plan. Others all have them either legislated or in place through agreement or at least a promise and the beginning of a plan to implement one. First, BC has none. Other than these little pilot projects in local communities, which is basically downloading the responsibility for ameliorating or not even reducing, but just managing poverty to local communities. So we're looking for the provincial government to have a plan. Anybody who's in business or runs a large organization usually has an organizational plan or a business plan and that sets some targets and some timelines so that you can, at the end of a year, say, well, how are we doing? Do we meet our target? Let's tweak the plan to make sure we improve. That's what we need to take this issue of child and family poverty seriously, is to have a provincial plan that spans all the ministries across government, so they all have a responsibility to bring their resources to bear, and some leadership from provincial government, and just stop denying that. What we're getting right now is sort of sympathy. It's too bad that so many poor kids are around, but we'll get to them when we can. We can't do very much right now, and that's just not true. We can do a lot more. So we're looking for that that overall plan. But we also want, within that plan, we have 21 recommendations in this report card that give them very specific things. Raise the minimum wage, raise welfare rates, start building that, investing in the $10 a day child care plan, pay living wages when you pay out government contracts. So there's many specific asks both for the provincial and federal government in our recommendations that would form the legs of a poverty reduction plan.
Yeah, and as you've mentioned a couple of times in the interview, there were references in the recommendations to wages and to tax policy. One of the recommendations that jumped out at me was, and I'm just reading from your document, guided by calls to action in the report of the Truth and Reconciliation Commission of Canada, federal and provincial governments should implement immediate increases to funding. Tell us a little more about that recommendation.
Well, that comes out of a long-standing human rights complaint that the First Nations Caring Society has been waging against the federal government, a human rights complaint that's still waiting for a decision on discriminatory funding for social welfare, child welfare services on First Nations reserves. So that kind of discrimination needs to end. So they get less money for things like child protection services and child welfare services than off-reserve provinces are funding. So that differential is what's at stake in that human rights complaint. But overall, there's other issues around funding for schools on reserves. There's even like building schools and having safe buildings, and there's housing issue investment. So there's just so many, because Aboriginal children are overrepresented given their numbers in the population, but they're overrepresented in the child poverty stats across the country. So again, that's that systemic institutional discrimination that's built into the way we're dispersing government funds and treating these children as second-class citizens. So that's very important to us in our recommendations that the federal government change that in multiple ways.
Is there anything else you'd like to add?
I just think that would like to add that we know that when we look at other places, whether it's other countries or other provinces that are doing better than British Columbia or Canada in lowering child poverty, that this is not an insurmountable task. So the defeatism that we hear from government that we can't do anything about this, or we have to wait for some economic bonanza to happen or something, is really just an expression of that it's not a priority or a lack of caring. And that's, I think, unacceptable to many British Columbians and many Canadians. So British Columbia could do better. Other provinces are doing better in bringing down their market, their earned income poverty rates after they do things like have more robust child tax benefits or child care programs, those kinds of things. So BC could take some lessons from other provinces and just have some more political will to make this a priority.
Adrienne Montani, thank you very much for taking the time to join us.
Thank you very much for the opportunity to talk with your listeners.
Adrienne Montani is the Provincial Coordinator for First Call BC Child and Youth Advocacy Coalition. The coalition is online at firstcallbc.org, and you can find the 2015 BC Child Poverty Report Card online at still1in5.ca, and that's using the numbers 1 and 5, still1in5.ca.
People First Radio is an initiative of Vancouver Island Mental Health Society in partnership with Radio Malaspina Society and broadcast on CHLY 101.7, radio from Nanaimo, British Columbia. The opinions expressed are not necessarily those of the partnering organizations. Listen to People First Radio on demand. Just Google People First Radio to find our web pages.